And welcome to another installment of The Two Brandons. This is Brandon Easton.
This is Brandon Thomas.
And we're coming to you today, and we're going to be talking to you about a bunch of stuff, but not long ago, we had a massive, massive press release go out into the industry regarding the website Comixology. And if you don't know what Comixology is, it is a online portal, or basically a distribution source for anyone who has a digital comic book or a comic book in a PDF format that will be sold to anyone who has a iOS or iTunes-enabled device, and it also works on Android-enabled devices. It is basically the digital version of the Diamond comic book distribution system where, you know, a person submits to Diamond and their comic book is sent to anyone who orders it who's in the Diamond chain anywhere in North America. Well, Comixology goes all over the planet, and it is literally a massive seismic shift in the way, number one, indie comic book creators can get their work out there, but just in the way we start thinking of ways to distribute comic books in general. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts on that are.
Well, I thought it was funny how it wasn't, you know, it felt like a huge story. When I saw the press release for it, it felt like a true game changer. And I don't know if it's because of our continuing allegiance to the direct market and the direct market model for comics, but I was really expecting some of the major comics news sites to really jump on that and get interviews up with the people running Comixology to see. I mean, I saw more press about it on Entertainment Weekly. You know, Entertainment Weekly did a profile of Becky Cloonan, who is one of the indie artists that is being spotlighted with their initial launch. And I think it's huge. I think it is a big thing for comics, for the continued expansion of the digital marketplace and for creators. I think it's a big deal. When I saw that press release, I instantly wanted to submit things to the new Comixology submit, and I'm sure a lot of creators felt the same way.
Well, I'll tell you what, the person I don't want to be right now is the submissions editor at Comixology.
No, absolutely not.
Because you're going to get all kinds of people with all kinds of projects submitting with the hopes that they'll get selected, and they do have, from what I understand, a stringent selection process that may or may not become controversial as time goes on. As more and more people get rejected, the first thing I'm wondering is if people are going to cry wolf. Are they going to complain that for some reason they may be biased, or will people complain that you have to be friends of the people at Comixology in order to get your book distributed through that service? And, you know, I'm looking at it as a situation where I believe if you follow their guidelines, if you pay attention to what their rules are, if you pay attention to the ways that, basically pay attention to what they're asking you to do, you're not going to have a problem, particularly if you took the time to create a quality comic book. And it doesn't matter what the content is, you know, clearly not adult, but as long as the content is for a general audience, up to about 17 years old or so, or over, or up to 35 or 45 or whatever the case may be, because comics can be for anybody. But when I think about the target market, I'm thinking a quality book could probably get through their submission process pretty quickly, provided the creator follows their guidelines.
I assume so. I think that they are definitely going to be deluged in responses to it. And I think with the way, since we're dealing with digital comics, I'm sure it won't be too long before we hear some feedback on exactly how the submission process is going and what books are making it in and what books aren't. But, you know, that's something that no one really knows the particulars of. But right. I think it's exciting that it's a non-exclusive contract. I think it doesn't seem like it's going to preclude creators from either putting the material up on their website for free or monetizing the material on their website in addition to having it featured on Comixology. I think right. that's a very good first step. I think that if Comixology had made this announcement and said that they wanted exclusive rights to your project, I think it would have gone over a lot differently. But the right. fact that it's a non-exclusive licensing agreement, the split seems fair. It seems as if creators will have a lot of control over pricing and how much their books actually cost. And right. I was very excited about it. I mean, I have plans to launch. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, I can get two more original properties launched this year. And right. at this point, I hadn't really decided what I was going to do with them, if I was just going to put them up on the web for free or if I was going to do the usual, you know, complete the book and submit it to companies. But when I saw this, it definitely, you know, it definitely brightened my day a little bit. And I definitely saw another avenue for publication that was closed off to us just last week. So I think it'll be big. I think it'll be big. And especially minority creators and creators that haven't had a terribly deep resume, maybe you're putting out your first or second project, I think it'll be a very good avenue to pursue, definitely.
Yeah, and I do, you mentioned the split for creators, and I very much like, I'm like half asleep right now, I very much do like. Anyway, I very much like, it's been a long night, I was writing until like 3 or 4 o'clock this morning, so the world is like sideways to me right now. But anyway, the split is Apple, iOS, or iTunes, the app itself, gets 30% of the sale price. The remaining 70% is split between the creator and Comixology even, so that's 35 and 35. And I've heard some people grumble about that so far online, but my thing is this. You're getting hosting, you're getting someone to translate it into a digital format, and you're getting proliferation through Apple, which right now still generally corners the app market.
Yes.
So I don't see the negative in it. I think it is a beautiful concept. You know, and once again, I do hope the vetting process is well-intentioned. I hope the vetting process is actually stringent. I hope it's fair. But with that being said, I do believe a lot of creators out there will suddenly have a means of distribution, an avenue of distribution, like, as you said, did not exist last week. This is a major, major moment in the American comic book or North American comic book industry, in the sense that just like Kickstarter recently became the number two publisher of graphic novels in the United States.
Independent graphic novels.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of that means that you no longer have to be beholden to smaller companies that don't offer the best rates. I mean, one of the things that makes this Comixology announcement amazing is, like you said, it is not an exclusive licensing
yes.
agreement. You are not losing any of your, you know, subsidiary rights and your ancillary rights. You're not giving up anything other than a larger cut of the pie, unfortunately. But, you know, sometimes you have to pay to get exposure. Like, you know, for me, we mentioned this a while back, at least I did. I said that, you know, I've given out a lot of free copies of my graphic novel because that's a way for me to get my name out there in ways that I normally couldn't. Like, I couldn't expect everyone always to buy it, and I certainly can't expect newspaper or magazine editors to buy it. So sometimes you just got to give it away, you know. But you can reach so many more people with a Comixology, you know, app and the Apple Store and all that really cool stuff. Just, I mean, this is just an amazing, amazing time. And I can't even stress that everybody who has a quality project, you really need to look into this and follow their guidelines and submit, just so that you can start to get build yourself an audience.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
This is amazing.
I, like I said, the fact that it's non-exclusive, is that's the game changer for me. I mean, nothing is going to preclude you from also running the material on your own website for free or encourage people to donate money to the project. You can
right.
still print up physical copies if you want to and sell them at cons. I think it's very, very, very important. And just like you said, I would encourage anyone that has a ready-made project already, because there are a lot of people that do, follow the instructions carefully, submit, and see what happens. I mean, I think the, you know, if you want to approach the Apple fees that are taken out of the purchase price as a buy-in, that buy-in is a lot less than buying into previews.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. I mean, I'm not even going to get into that, but yes.
there are no print runs to deal with. There is a minimal of overhead. I mean, all you have to do, in most cases, you'll have to shell out a little money to have the book completed, but even that's not true in every case. You know, if you can find a reliable creative team that is willing to work for back end, then it just opens up a lot of possibilities, and I really hope that people take advantage of it, and I really hope that I see a lot more coverage on the specifics of it coming from the major sites. Because I haven't thus far, and I'm just chalking that up to, you know, the I know the sites are really crunched for time, and they have a lot of news stories that are in the pipeline weeks and weeks ahead. But in the weeks to come, I hope to see a lot more press into the actual specifics of this arrangement with Comixology and how important it is to get new voices out there into the marketplace.
Yeah, and that's everything.
Submit.
Put your stuff out there, folks.
Please do it.
Walking Dead, man. I'm really liking what they're doing with season 3. Because by the time this episode ends up on line, a lot of what we've talked about will probably be the distant past, because I believe the season finale will air before this might make it on the air.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Might make it about a week. I think there are 4 more episodes, so you might be listening to this a week or a couple of days maybe before the actual finale hits.
Awesome. Okay. So with that being said, it's been really interesting. I have a lot to say about Michonne. I am very pleased with the actress. Her name is Danai Gurira, and she has done an amazing job thus far with the material she's been given. The scripts haven't really challenged her as an actress other than scowling all the time. But in the most recent episode, which is the one where Lenny Wilkins, I believe his name is, the guy who plays Morgan, when they go to get guns from Rick's old sheriff's department, they find out that the small town has been turned into a giant booby trap for zombies. So, you know, Morgan, who was last seen, I believe, in episode 1 or 2 of the very first season of Walking Dead, is still there, and he's lost his mind. You know, his son has been turned. You know, obviously, I don't think he killed his wife yet. He said he wasn't able to pull the trigger, or his son wasn't able to pull the trigger, you know, when she attacked him. And basically, it was an episode that showed how Morgan was a mirror for what Rick was slowly becoming, and he stepped back from the abyss after dealing with Morgan for about 45 minutes, which was a very well-paced episode. And it was one of the few times I've seen an entire act of a TV show be one monologue. And Lenny Wilkins delivered one of the best monologues I've ever seen on television, talking about how he couldn't kill his wife still, and how his son couldn't kill his wife even when she attacked him. And it was heartbreaking, you know. And it was a great moment with Michonne and Carl, where he goes to retrieve a photo from an old bar where the family used to, or at least the adults in the family used to hang out at. It's a picture of Laurie, Rick, and Carl when he was younger. And he wanted to get that so that his baby sister Judith will know what his mom looked like. And I thought that was a beautiful touch. And it was a very interesting character interaction between Carl and Michonne, where she suddenly has become a surrogate mother figure for him, and a dad too, because Rick lost his damn mom for a while. So This in an episode was called Clear.
Yeah.
And it was very well done. And it really redeemed my faith in what they're going to do with Michonne, because all season long, I had been terrified that they were going to shoot or film, you know, they were going to adapt the rape storyline from the graphic novel where Michonne is mercilessly beaten and raped by the governor for like a week or so. And it was just one of the worst things I'd ever seen in a comic book, and I'm not going to get into the whole politics of it, but you know, it did make Michonne a great character. I didn't feel as though she needed to be raped, but her vengeance on the governor was one of the key moments in the Walking Dead universe, you know. And I'm glad that they've kind of moved away from that. I mean, they did have the scene where Maggie was molested by the governor, but they didn't do the full-on rape torture sequence that was in the original graphic novel of Michonne. So I'm hoping with a few episodes left, they don't shoehorn that in there just so they could do it.
You know, when Michonne showed up at the end of season two, I think this was before Danai had even been cast in the role. Right. I know that there was a lot of excitement from Walking Dead fans, but also a little trepidation because, you know, that I'll tell you that scene in the comic book series, which I was reading monthly at that time. I think I've probably read Walking Dead monthly since it's been released.
Okay.
That particular sequence, it changed the way that I read that book. And I'll say it in these kind of terms. I mean, usually when I buy a comic book in single issues and I enjoy how the story is being told, I enjoy the artwork, typically that means that I'm going to buy the trade collection of that comic book so I can put it on the shelf, because that's how I like my comics now, with spines. But that particular sequence in the book kind of prevented me from buying. I decided I wasn't going to buy Walking Dead trades anymore.
Okay.
I still do read the book because I still think it's a great book, and I like the characters. I like the storytelling, and I want to keep up on it to see what's going on in it. But that scene in particular, and this is not the only scene like that over the life of the book. The book itself is particularly bleak. It's incredibly violent. And it's at times heartbreaking. And it has become one of those books that, you know, I happily buy and support every month. But it's something that I don't feel like I want to read it over and over again. It's not something that I want to return to, you know, once or twice a year or however many times I get to reread things, that I actually want to reread because it's so, you know, it's bleak, it's a downer, and, you know, right. And that's part of the fabric of the book. But to me, the major turning point was the Michelle, Governor, Dale, Rick, you know, kind of torture rape sequence.
Right.
And, you know, it was interesting to me to kind of watch the heat that Robert Kirkman took in his own letters page months after that happened. And I, you know, this has happened before where, you know, you have a black character that suddenly appears in one of your favorite books, and something terrible is either done to them, or they turn out to be a traitor, or a liar, or a cheat.
Right.
And sometimes I just don't think that, sometimes people don't realize just how important certain aspects of this is to certain parts of the audience. And I'll give you an example. I'm a huge, huge, huge Brian K. Vaughan fan. Brian K. Vaughan wrote a book for Marvel a few years ago called Runaways. It was about the children of a group of supervillains. It's basically a group of teenagers find out that their parents are thieves and killers, And there was a character named Alex Wilder, and he was a black character.
Yes.
He pretty much led the group. And, you know, we watched the adventures of these characters for about a year and a half, and then we find out that Alex Wilder is a traitor, and he is still in allegiance with his evil parents.
Right.
And it was absolutely heartbreaking to me. And I remember writing to Brian Vaughn and telling him how important it was that there was a strong, incredibly intelligent black character in Marvel Comics somewhere, and how, you know, deflating it was to find out that that character was a traitor.
Right.
And I just think that, and I don't want to say that, you know, this is a whole, well, you know, if he was black, he would have understood. But if he was black, he probably would have understood, you know, that it was important and it was notable that that character existed. And for him to turn out to be a thief, a liar, a cheat, and a traitor was, it's deflating to a lot of people. I know that a lot of people feel similar about the portrayal of the Patriot character in Young Avengers, where very similar things have happened to that character in the book, where, he's a drug addict, you know, he's faking his powers. So, you know, it was a very similar situation with Michonne and Walking Dead and the horribly unfortunate thing that happened to her. And obviously, you know, I've kept reading the book, and that's a blip, you know, on, you know, the life of this character that is extended for almost 100 issues past that. But it was definitely a concern when I realized that they were going to put her on the show. And just like you said, I did find it to be a relief that it seems that they're not going to do that particular storyline. Though, again, this will release a little closer to the season finale, so hopefully we haven't spoke too soon about it. But this last episode, I thought, was an appropriate spotlight for her character. Right. I think the fact that it was written by Scott Gimple, who is going to take over as the showrunner in season 4, I think that's
from Glenn Mazzara, right?
Yeah,
right.
I think that's encouraging to the future of the show. That I know there have been some complaints that there isn't enough character development on the show, and it's basically just killing folks. So so far so good. It seems like they're definitely working her into the main group and giving her a little more to do as a character and also as an actor. So, you know, cross our fingers that she will become one of the main characters in the show and be able to stand next to Rick and Daryl and some of the other, you know, fan favorite characters that they've developed over the last couple of seasons.
Well, you know, the one thing I noticed about The Walking Dead, and from a writing perspective, it feels very much like somebody really likes Stephen King. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I don't know if you read Stephen King, but Stephen King's storytelling is very much like season 2, you know, and in a sense that he takes his sweet time to do everything, and he, with the hope that by the time bad things happen, you care so much that it hurts more. But the problem with that approach is that you better make those people very interesting in that time period that you're wasting with all the slow burn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like, I would disagree to say that the character development isn't happening, but the character development isn't happening for everybody. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they'll develop the hell out of Rick. They develop the hell out of Andrea this season, surprisingly. You know, they really developed Glenn, which was shocking, to the level of which they've developed this guy. Because when he started out, he was kind of, you know, a bitch. And now he's like a really strong central character who is now as dangerous as Rick could be in terms of his fighting ability.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They've started to sort of develop Maggie. You know, and the amazing thing is, Merle, who only has shown up in maybe 5 episodes, got more character development in those 5 episodes that T-Dog got in a 20-minute event. You know, I mean, there were episodes in season two where T-Dog didn't even show up. You know, he was there somewhere. You know,
I remember he cut his arm in the season premiere of season two.
Now, the crazy part is the guy that plays Merle is an actor named Michael Rooker, who is amazing, by the way. I mean,
yes. This
guy's been around since, what, Cliffhanger? It was Cliffhanger, the Stallone movie. And he's done a lot of small stuff. He was in Mallrats as the villain. He was absolutely amazing in Mallrats as the villain, Mr. Svenning. he's done so many great movies. And he brings a lot to the role because he could just be another stupid racist redneck, but they've done more with that character than make him he's actually quite smart. He's just evil racist.
Right.
You know, because there are smart people who are racist. You know, racism is not always a measure of intelligence. It's really a measure of critical thinking. You know, a person can be intelligent but not a critical thinker. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, so Merle has shockingly been developed in a way where he makes sense now. Like, he actually makes sense as a character, and it's weird that I'm sitting here as a black male watching a racist character and saying they actually done something with him.
Right.
You know, just like with Daryl. You know, now I would like to see Tyrese and Michonne get that same level of treatment because Tyrese came and left. And, you know, Tyrese's band is clearly going to die. Everyone in Tyrese's group clearly is going to die. So, you know, I mean, knock on wood, but I mean, they're all going to, you know that. So Tyrese is going to be left alone. And the episode where Tyrese was inside of the jail, he actually showed incredible level of leadership and compassion.
Yep.
You know? Is it raining down there again? I hear like water.
Yeah, it is. It's back.
Good God. Well, for those who don't know, we're both located in Southern California or so. And there was this ridiculous rain hailstorm, at least in L.A., that passed through that just rattled my windows and wet up my floors. So just heard a little bit of that storm.
yeah, if you can hear a little bit of that in the background, please bear with us.
Yeah, so but the reality is that, you know, I would like to see, you know, Tyrese and Michonne and a couple other characters get a little bit more attention. I mean, Maggie's sister, I still don't know anything about her.
She sings.
Yeah, she sings. She's a beautiful voice, by the way. And the dad, you know, what's his name, Herschel?
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of like Robert E. Lee now with one leg. You know, I don't know what his point is. I mean, he kind of replaced Dale as the voice of reason.
Right. It's the have conscience the old, of and, the show.
Yeah, you got to have the old, but he's always an old man with a white beard, you know, so at least in the Walking Dead universe.
Right.
So we'll see what's going to happen.
That's how you know they're wise, if they're old.
Yeah, and they have to have a white beard. but the reality is that by the time you hear this, a lot of stuff we said may not be true, and some of the stuff we said absolutely will be true. So it's going to be a wild ride. I mean, you know that the final battle is going to be sick, and we're not going to walk out with the same number of characters.
No.
So there's going to be actor turnover like, you know, an MF-er, you know, by the end of the season. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. It'll be fun. It's been interesting so far, and it just trips me out that the show is so popular. I mean, I just remember reading the comic, and I've been reading the comic for years, and that was one of my my main you know, I had a discussion with a close friend about the Michonne situation and whether or not they would do that storyline, and my feeling was that they would not under any circumstances do that storyline, just because, you know, it's a little different when you're doing something like that when only 15,000 people are going to see it. But right. When you're talking about you have 12 to 15 million people that are watching this show every week, I don't think it's a really good idea for them to brutalize the first strong black female character that appears on the show. I mean, I forgot what the other woman's name was that stayed behind at the CDC and no one seemed to care.
Oh, was she black?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the skinny lady. Yeah, I remember her. Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember.
See, wow. Even we can't remember.
Wow, that's crazy.
Well, yeah.
The characters coming and going.
Yeah.
And I hate to spoil anything, but I got to talk about the Clone Wars.
All right.
What is it, season 5, right?
Yes, season 5, just finished.
Right. Now, before I get into that, Is there going to be a season six?
I think there is going to be a season six, but since Disney now owns Star Wars, it probably won't be on Cartoon Network.
Right.
So it might be on one of the Disney channels. They haven't announced it, but I think they've said that they were already working on season six. So I'm hoping that the recent acquisition of, you know, everything Star Wars by Disney hasn't changed that. So it feels like they could get maybe one more season out of it and really bring it up to, you know, episode three, Revenge of the Sith, and, you know, put out a nice complete set that I'll be buying.
Well, bro, you know, before I get into it, you know, I was always kind of tentative about the Clone Wars series because I saw the movie, and the movie wasn't that great.
No, it wasn't.
You know, and I was angry because I went to the movies to see, and I was really excited that I would see another Star Wars movie after the prequels were over in a movie theater, and it wasn't that great. But, you know, the season one calmed me down a bit. Season two was so-so. There were some good episodes in there. Season three was strong. And season four, with the return of Darth Maul and his discovery of his brother, Savage Opress, that was pretty good stuff. And then, you know, season five has been up and down. I mean, they had a bunch of kids episodes, and they had a bunch of droid episodes. And then finally, they got back to normal with the Mandalorian arc with Obi-Wan's lost love. And then they jumped into this terrorism storyline at the Jedi Temple, which was, you know, I didn't see that coming for a long shot. You know, that was really, really nice storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And with the events of the final episode of season five, you know, you had Ahsoka being expelled from the Jedi Order, but then Ahsoka, I keep calling her Ahsoka for some reason, Ahsoka was expelled from the Jedi Order. And then they want to bring her back after they found out who really committed the crimes. And she's like, no, you didn't trust me, and I'm not going to trust you, and I got to figure out who I am. And it was a really beautiful moment in so many ways, on so many levels. It was such beautiful animation, great storytelling. The score was
great. Score.
And if you can't, the last three episodes of season five of The Clone Wars has the best music from that entire series thus far, and to understand the significance of that, clearly, for those of you who watch it, you know what I mean when I say the Clone Wars sounds amazing. Well, this episode, you know, the last three episodes, they did this thing where they were using parts of John Williams' score woven into the TV score, and it was just beautiful stuff. Beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
And with that being said, with, you know, how Ahsoka leaves the series, it changes a lot because, you know, when she was introduced, the first thing that went through my mind, the moment I saw her, was that her death is going to push Anakin a little bit closer to the dark side of the Force. That's the first thing I thought when he took her on as a Padawan,
yep.
Right? So now that she's left and has essentially become a Ronin, you know, like a lost wandering samurai, I don't know what's going to happen in season six that would push Anakin a little bit closer to the dark side, because another factor is how much time is going past in the Clone Wars timeline, because it's not, I mean, I don't think it's a year for every season, because if that's the case, you know, 6 years did not pass between the end of episode two and the beginning of episode three, you know, so I'm wondering what's going on here, like where are they going to go next? And if Ahsoka doesn't die, then where is she during Order 66, you know, the Jedi Purge, which was seen in Episode 3? So it opens up a lot of questions for hardcore Star Wars fans like myself who follow the timeline and know, you know, where things – anyone who watches it knows where it all ends up. So where's Ahsoka in Episode 3, you know?
She hadn't been created yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because Star Wars is always 9 episodes. You know?
Yeah.
No, that's a good question. No, that's funny. But, you know, realistically, when you think about it, it's like this is really poor planning because no one seems to know or no one seems to be aware of Ahsoka at all. Like, was her memory erased from, you know, all Jedi somehow? Like, there's no mention of your Padawan. you know, of anything that happens in the Clone Wars. It's really interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things where you can see that they're playing a little, you know, fast and loose with the timeline, and they're just, you know, they just expect everyone to either fill in the blanks for themselves or just decide that it's not that important. And, oh, it doesn't, you know, it's not completely insane, so we can accept that. But I think that, you know, despite Ahsoka, you know, leaving the Jedi Order, obviously I think there is going to be some attention paid to what happens to her afterwards.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Possibly the thing that happens to her now, maybe that's the thing that pushes Anakin a little closer to the dark side. And I think they've done a good job of that over the years, you know, putting that character in Obi-Wan in the situations where you can kind of see him being pushed towards the dark side. I mean, even in the very final scene that he has before Ahsoka walks off, she basically tells him that she knows that he has been harboring thoughts about leaving the Jedi Order and about how ineffective and corrupted they've become during the Clone War. So I think they're trying to do their best to make it fit together as well as possible. But unless, you know, George Lucas wants to go, or Disney, I guess now, if Disney can go back in and dub a line in Episode 3 where somebody, hey, remember that Padawan you had? And whatever happened to her?
They'll add that later.
what's even more exciting to me is, you know, hey, you know, what if Ahsoka survived Order 66? You know, they're doing a new, you know, a whole new trilogy now. I mean, maybe they can sneak in really old Ahsoka into the new trilogy somewhere. So I mean, it's a lot of possibilities for them. And you know, I just think it's one of those things where they think that the fans will accept the story if the story is good. They'll accept the fact that the timeline and the continuity is. It's the same thing with comics. You know, a lot of comics play fast and loose with the continuity and when characters have met and what characters have been together and now aren't. You know, I think it's been pretty accepted that if the story is good, then people will forgive, you know, some of the timeline inconsistencies. And there always are inconsistencies because the same people aren't working on the projects. You know, eventually whoever is in charge of, you know, Batman now is going to give way to somebody else, and they're going to go in and they're going to tweak that timeline to their, you know, specifications,
right.
And everything is not going to quite fit together, which again is another strength of creator-owned titles, because it's, you know, alarmingly more consistent. I mean, The Walking Dead has been created by the same two creators since issue six or seven?
Right, after Tony Moore left.
Yeah,
right?
After Tony Moore left. It's been Kirkman and Charlie Adler.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those things, but I think it's been a very cool expansion of the Star Wars universe. I think they've been able to play with a lot of different characters that they just didn't have the time and space for. I really enjoy seeing more of the planets in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed that, the different kind of, you know, like art design that goes into them creating different planets, and they're telling stories about terrorism and politics and betrayal and compromise, and I think it's been really good thus far. They have had some up and downs, and like you said, the movie in that first season were a little rough, but I think once they found out what works and what doesn't, I think it's been a pretty strong show. And
yeah,
obviously if I was 10 years old, it would be the only thing that was important to me in life. And I probably would have, you know, been bawling my eyes out when Ahsoka walks away, just like I was when Optimus Prime died in Transformers the movie. But you know, that's an entire different thing. But I think they've done some very interesting things. I hope that they do go ahead and do season six, do one last thing to push it even closer to episode 3. But I've enjoyed the work that they've done, and I always notice the choreography on the lightsaber fights.
Oh man.
it gets a little better. Like it gets crazier and crazier every year. So
like Palpatine versus Darth Maul and Seven.
Yeah.
That was one of the greatest battles I've ever seen.
That was amazing. That was amazing. So
You know what's interesting about the Clone Wars, and this is something that hasn't really happened since the Shadows of the Empire game and novel and comic book series.
Which I had.
Well, yeah, I'm not even going to start on that stuff. But the one thing that was interesting about the Shadows of the Empire side story was the exploration of the Star Wars criminal underworld.
Yes.
Which is something that is, you know, in the original trilogy, it's very much hinted at, and it's kind of a recurring theme because Jabba the Hutt is mentioned in Episode 4. You know, Jabba the Hutt is mentioned in Empire Strikes Back. Then a major part of Return of the Jedi is spent with Jabba the Hutt, who is basically a gangster. And it's kind of been a thing where they always touched on a little bit that, you know, there's this massive criminal underworld empire that's running underneath the surface of the Star Wars galaxy, you know, and you know you saw the bounty hunters in Empire Strikes Back. You hear about all these things that go on with Han Solo and smuggling and all
the
this
bounties
stuff.
and
like I said, the bounty hunters pop up in Episode, you know, in Empire Strikes Back, you know, and like I said, there's a whole chunk of Return of the Jedi that's spent in dealing with Jabba the Hutt, and in Clone Wars, particularly this season, you really got to see more and more of the Star Wars criminal underworld. And that's really cool because, you know, according to the big rumor, is that there will be a live-action Star Wars show coming in the next couple of years, and it will take place in the Star Wars criminal underworld.
They also announced that new video game, the 1313, that also takes place in the same space.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Star Wars 1313... If for those who might not know, is a video game that's supposed to be in this generation of systems.
It'll probably be the next generation.
Yeah, something happened, and they've not mentioned anything about Star Wars 1313. But if you go online, you can find a link to – it's on YouTube, so you can find the 1313 demo, which has, I think, the first like minute and a half or first 5 minutes of gameplay. Mm-hmm. And it looks pretty amazing, but you know, once again, I don't know what's going to happen with that. But – you know, kind of to wrap this part up, I just think it's really a great idea that Star Wars is really examining their criminal underworld. And I think that there's a lot you could do with it without always talking about Jedi and Sith, you know?
Yeah. Which I think is restrictive because they've kind of outlined all of the rules that kind of govern the Jedi versus the Sith. And they can't... You know, it just, they don't have as much room to play. You know, they can't just keep introducing, oh, yeah, well, it's like a secret league of Jedi that survived the Purge. You know, that kind of, you know, blows everything out of the water. But, you know, being able to work with some of the darker, more, you know, hidden underground aspects of the Star Wars universe is pretty cool. And I think we're definitely going to see more of that. So hopefully we'll get that TV show soon.
Yeah. Now with that, I wanted to talk about another show that I'm really, really enjoying, which is Arrow, which is on the CW network. And to me has been one of the best shows on the CW network. And I don't really watch CW because everybody looks like they're from Maxim magazine in it. You know, it's all these young buffed people with nobody hair whatsoever. And they just all like perpetually 20 years old. And for that reason, I won't watch stuff like The Vampire Diaries. I won't watch stuff like, I would never watch 90210 unless somebody paid me. And you would really have to pay me a whole lot of money to want to sit down and watch Beverly Hills, the new 90210 series, which thankfully just got canceled, which is hilarious. But Arrow has really, really impressed me on multiple levels. And this was a show that I was not going to give a chance to because when I saw the trailer for it, all I saw were a bunch of really, you know, buffed young men with no body hair, no facial hair, who just, you know, were like, you know, basically swimsuit male swimsuit models who were given a TV show. But then I watched the pilot of Arrow, and it really blew my mind. Now, I have to concede that I was never a fan of the Green Arrow character on Smallville, and I didn't really pay attention to it. In fact, I stopped watching Smallville just like almost everybody I know who wasn't female. So,
yeah,
you know, with Arrow, I was willing to give it a shot, and I said, you know what, let me watch this. And at first, like, I thought, okay, this is like any other story, you know, the superhero loses their parent in a weird way, and, you know, in a boat accident, and then he's on this island. But as the show developed, you know, it turned out that there's so much moral ambiguity in the show. There's so many shades of gray. Like, there isn't really a true evil person because everybody's motives have not been fully revealed. And even Oliver Queen's family is implicated in a lot of dirty stuff, and it's done in a way that's completely understandable and completely relatable. And it's a show that each episode that goes by, and I'm about 5 episodes behind right now, but every episode I've seen thus far, it has just gotten better and better. And the cast is shockingly good. I mean, even though these people look like swimsuit models, they actually have been pretty good with their acting. And it's extremely, I mean, what was really even more shocking was that Arrow is an extremely diverse show. And I mean everybody. I'm not just talking about black folks. I mean, there's a lot of different kind of people that live in Starling City. And two of the main characters are African-American males. And that's something you normally don't see on any superhero show. You know, and I have been extremely impressed by the level of storytelling. The fight choreography is just amazing. And they've had an array of DC Comics villains show up, but they are very, like, Christopher Nolan-esque. They're not in stupid costumes, and the ones who are, their costumes are muted, so it looks real. Like, for example, Deathstroke the Terminator, one of the baddest badasses in all of comics, has shown up repeatedly on Arrow, and the way that they've handled him has been just amazing. One of the bad guys, I think it was Dr. Vertigo or Mr. Vertigo, who uses, you know, hypnosis and drugs and stuff to control people, he's shown up, and they've done really hyper-realistic takes on a character that would otherwise be laughable. So if any of you out there aren't watching Arrow, I strongly, strongly recommend, particularly if you're a fan of the DC Comics universe, to take a look at what they're doing with this show. It is very, very well done. It's Greg Berlanti, Mark Guggenheim, and a guy named Andrew Kreisberg, who has done a lot of stuff in the past, too. And if you look them up, you'll see what their, you know, on IMDb, you'll see what their pedigree is. And I just would say that the problem with the show is that not everybody's able to watch it because CW is not cleared in the entire United States. In fact, because of a contract dispute in the New York metropolitan area, the CW is not in a lot of cable services in New York City, which is the United States' largest market.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, when I found out, when I would go back east or go to New York and I would try to watch Arrow, you know, I couldn't find the CW. And I'd ask folks, I'm like, where's the CW? And they're like, well, it doesn't come on here. And I'm like, what do you mean it doesn't come on here? And they're like, it's not on this cable network. You know, it's not carried by that provider. And it turned out there was a contract dispute with Time Warner Cable, with Comcast, with all the Optimum, all these other people in the New York metropolitan area. And as a result, a show that would probably be huge in New York City is not being shown. So, you know, if you can go to the website, the CW website does have full episodes. The problem is that they take down the earliest ones. So you'll probably, if you start watching it from the website, you'll be seeing it from the middle of the season as opposed to the beginning. So that's really my biggest recommendation for this time. I can't recommend it enough. I mean, it's the show that Heroes should have been. It's what Smallville...
Poor Heroes. Really is.
I mean, the thing with Heroes was that it just felt like they had no idea what to do after the 13th episode. It felt like they were expecting to get canceled, so they wrote this incredible cliffhanger at episode 13, and then they got, you know, a full season, and they were like, oh, we actually have to, you know, produce these. So that's why the second half of season one started to seem unfocused and nonsensical. Mm-hmm. Because I don't believe they thought they were going to get a whole first season. Because if you notice, and anybody who's watched Heroes can attest to this, episode 1 and 13 are very tight and internally consistent. And episode, I think, 14 or whatever, 14 to 20 or 14 to 18, whatever it was, mm-hmm. they're not as tight. They seem kind of unfocused. The stories kind of fall apart. And even at the end of the season, things weren't as tight as they could be. But we were just happy to have a show about superheroes that was on a major network that was doing well.
Yep.
You know, I mean, come on. I mean, who would have ever thought in my lifetime there'd be a show with superheroes that was actually done well and that people watched? You know, I mean, who thought?
It's crazy.
And, you know, and so now Arrow, in my mind, occupies that space. Arrow is extremely well done. It is very smart. I mean, it does have a second season, thank God. So hopefully the audience will only build. And it's one of the few CW programs that has held their audience consistently through the season. Because CW has this thing of peaking really high, and then the rest of the season is a water slide as far as viewership goes. You know. So with that being said, I would really suggest people watch Arrow. You know, and if you haven't watched it, Brandon, I
haven't. I'm one of those people that saw it and immediately thought of Smallville. And right. I think I watched the first two or three seasons of Smallville, and then it just I just couldn't do it anymore. I did sneak back in when they did those really cool episodes that Christopher Reeve guest starred on.
I thought
that was a pretty cool choice to bring him into the series in some capacity, but I wasn't a huge Smallville fan, and that really influenced my decision to kind of let Arrow fly past me. So based on your recommendation, though, I have to find it on Amazon or iTunes or something like that.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you can. You know, do whatever you can. Just, I mean, like I said, I don't know if where you live, the CW network is on.
Yeah, I do have the CW. I don't know what their on-demand situation is.
Right.
But, you know, I can get caught up. Hopefully somebody will pick it up this summer, either a Netflix or Amazon streaming, and I can get caught up before the second season starts.
I strongly recommend it. I don't think you'd be disappointed based on the things that you talk about, stuff you like. It's not very whimsical, though. I will say there's not a lot of like campy stuff. It's very dark. I mean, in the sense that it doesn't really have a sense of humor, you know, about itself. I mean, there's times when there are funny moments, but as a series, it's not like cheesy. There's no real kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek, self-referential element that a lot of shows, you know, in the past have done. It's definitely not like Batman from the 60s.
Right? Oh, well, I don't think anybody wants to see that again. But
you know what, though? Dude, the average person still thinks all comic books are like the Batman show from the 60s.
It's upsetting.
Yeah, it is, because anytime I tell people what I do...
We've made so much progress creatively,
but no one knows.
I know.
You know, the direct market is what stopped people from knowing this, you know, and, you know, kind of tying it back to where we started today, you know, hopefully Comixology's, you know, new initiative and new, you know, business model will expose more people, particularly the casual app user, to maybe take a chance on comics. You know, I mean, it's difficult because the digital comic world is a world within a world within a world, you know?
Yes.
So we have to find a way for comics to leapfrog over all those preconceived notions so that some young lady sitting on a train, particularly in the East Coast cities, waiting on a subway train to come and is on a platform that's outside and wants something to read, she'll download, you know, whatever, you know, Strangers in Paradise or, you know, the Hernandez brothers used to do. What was it called?
Love and Rockets.
Love and Rockets. There you go. I'm sorry. Like I said, I've been up for like 15 hours or whatever. Yeah, like Love and Rockets. I mean, hopefully somebody will make something that somebody would like to download that's not just a hardcore fanboy or fangirl. You know, and I'm hoping that'll happen because it seems to me the direct market has taken comics away from the masses. Because now, you know, when I go to like Target or Walmart or Kmart or Sears or whatever the case may be, and they have magazine racks, I always look for comics. And there just aren't as many comics visually available to the public as it used to be. I mean, I think the only place that really does that well is Barnes & Noble, because they have a comic book section and they have a comic book rack in their magazine department.
Yeah.
So you at least see comic books as opposed to just not seeing them at all. You know what I mean?
Right.
There are people who I meet who don't even realize that there's still a comic book, you know, industry. You know what I mean? Like, I talk to people, they're like, oh, well, they know there's an Avengers movie, they know there's a Batman movie, but they didn't realize that people were still buying comic books.
Right.
And
they didn't realize that Batman has like 6 or 7 titles.
Yeah, or doesn't realize that Batman doesn't really have blam, pow, splat, you know, across every single page with, you know, Adam West and Burt Ward making bad puns. You know, it's not like that. It's never been like that. And anyone who's listening to this clearly knows that. But I just wish there was a way to broadcast that to the great masses so that, you know, people will give a show like Alphas, which got canceled, a chance, and will definitely continue to watch or support Arrow, which is thankfully going into a second season. And here's hoping they keep the level of quality up. And here's hoping that they incorporate more of the DC universe in the way that they've done it so far. Mm-hmm. Because Oliver Queen or Green Arrow does not have the best rogues gallery in the world.
No.
So you've got to find, and they've used those people to the best of their ability, and it's worked. That's why I'm wondering if they get someone like a Captain Cold, or if they get a like a Joker type character,
mm-hmm.
somebody, or a Scarecrow, somebody you could conceivably bring to the Arrow universe and not be stupid looking. You know, I'm hoping they start expanding. I mean, they already have the character who will become Black Canary in there, you know. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. And here's hoping more people give comics in general a chance. And with that, I'm done.
All right, everybody. It's another installment of the Two Brandons. And thanks for listening. So we'll see you next time.
Take care, everybody.
All right. Thanks again.